Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded. On this week's episode, I am super excited to be introducing you to our next special guest, Principal Psychologist of the Mental Care Clinic, Dr. Daisy Gemayel. Daisy grew up in Lebanon and traveled to the US, where she attended Harvard University at Cambridge in Massachusetts. Alongside her studies, Daisy has had many years of experience working in private practice, community mental health, and in hospital settings. On today's episode, we will be speaking about the topic of self-confidence and self-esteem and its links to eating disorders, really exploring the links between self-confidence and eating pathology. So please welcome our next guest, Daisy. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Daisy.
Thanks, Jess, for having me today.
Would you be able to provide a little background information about yourself and maybe speak about some things that you like to do to stay well?
Yes, definitely. So I have always had a passion for helping others. And after completing my bachelor degree in psychology with honors and master degree, I've decided to do a PhD in the field. Now, I'm practicing as a psychologist in clinical setting and also doing some research related to postnatal depression in men. Now, about things that I do just to keep myself and to stay well, in my free time, I enjoy staying active, like going for long walks, doing yoga, playing tennis. I also enjoy reading and spending some quality time with my family and friends. These things like help me to maintain a sense of balance and well-being in my life.
Yeah. And could you talk a little bit about kind of the research you've done with postnatal depression for men?
Yes, of course. So during my PhD, I was developing a psychometric tool that helped to assess antenatal and postnatal depression in men, basically focusing on the challenges that they face during this period. So this tool will help clinicians and mental health professionals to identify people or fathers at risk of depression during that period, so they can receive an intervention or a prevention program that can help during that period of time.
Wow, yeah, that definitely would occur for both men and women. And I guess it's more focused on women, but men would definitely experience similar symptoms.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I guess each week on the podcast, we do like to ask our guests about a recent challenge that they've experienced and how they have managed to overcome it. Do you have one?
Yes, actually, one recent challenge that I faced was adjusting to my move from Sydney to Canberra for work. Moving can be a little bit stressful and overwhelming. So especially when you're leaving behind like your support system and familiar surroundings. So to help myself and overcome that challenge, I prioritized my self-care and maintained an open communication with my loved ones. But also I reminded myself that this move was for a positive reason, and I embraced all the opportunities and new opportunities and experiences coming with it.
Yeah, and I guess what was the reason that you decided to move from Sydney to Canberra?
Yes, so I decided to move to Canberra. I decided to open my own practice in Canberra. So it was challenging. I also had my practice in Sydney at that time. And it was like you're moving and adjusting, but at the same time, you're trying to launch a new business. So it was very challenging in a new environment, but it was a great experience.
Yeah, well, good on you for doing that. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I really love your accent. Where are you from?
So I'm from Lebanon, but my accent, I think, because my first language is French, so there might be a little bit French accent.
Wow, what a great mix. Did you live in France?
No, actually, because everything we study in school, university is in French. So French is mainly the first language, and the Arabic language is sort of what we talk at home, or sometimes people still talk French at home.
Yeah, because you do have a French accent. It's kind of like I've heard people from Thailand, their teachers have American accents. So a lot of people who learn English in Thailand, they have an American accent. And it's just, yeah, it's amazing how that all works.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And I guess on the topic of today, we are going to be talking about confidence. But I guess, how do you define self-esteem?
Well, self-esteem is the overall sense of worth and a value that one holds for themselves. It involves how you perceive ourself and our strength, weaknesses, and also how much we believe in our abilities. However, it's important to note that self-esteem is not a fixed rate, so it can fluctuate based on our experiences and circumstances.
Yes. And I guess what is the link between low self-esteem and eating?
Well, research has shown that people with low self-esteem are more likely to develop disordered eating patterns as a way to cope with the negative thoughts and emotions that they are experiencing. Now, when people don't feel great about themselves, it kind of sets the stage for them to start messing a little bit with their eating habits, not in a so great ways. Imagine someone who doesn't think too highly of how they look or who they are. So they might start doing extreme things in their diet with their diet, trying to take back some control or hit some kind of ideal look. They think that it will make them feel likable or valuable. So it's like trying to fix how you feel on the inside by changing something on the outside. But honestly, it's like putting a band-aid on a deeper issue. So they are using the eating patterns as a way to deal with tough feelings of not being good enough or not liking themselves much. So the focus on food, weight, body image, really can distract the person from addressing underlying emotional issues, which further can perpetuate low self-esteem.
Yes. How might then low self-esteem contribute to the maintenance of eating disorders?
Well, the disordered eating can further damage the individual's self-esteem as it reinforces the negative thoughts and beliefs that drive the behavior about themselves. Trying to cope with feeling down about yourself by messing with eating habits, it can backfire big time. It's like you're stuck in this loop where you eat in a way you hope that it will make you feel better of how you look, about how you look, but it ends up making you feel even worse. So you might start feeling like guilty or ashamed, especially when things don't change the way you hoped or you cannot keep it up. So it's not just an emotional roller coaster. It's disordered eating can lead to real health issues. So like not getting enough nutrients or changes that are hard to hide, which can make you feel worse about your body. So you end up with this tough cycle of eating in unhealthy ways, trying to boost your self-esteem, but it just tanks further. Now, to break from that cycle usually means like getting some help, like talking to a therapist or joining a support group, and sometimes seeing a doctor. It's all about finding healthier ways to deal with those low feelings and starting to see yourself in a more positive light.
Yes.
So, how might struggles with stating or meeting your needs be correlated with eating disorders?
So, you know, when sometimes like it's really hard to figure out what you need, or even it's harder to actually ask for it. Well, it turns out that these struggles are pretty linked closely to eating disorder. It's like instead of dealing with all those messy emotions and psychological needs head on, some people turn to disordered eating as a kind of escape hatch. And it's their way of coping without having to verbalize or confront what's really going on inside. But using disordered eating as a coping, kind of like putting a band-aid on a broken arm. So, sure, you're not dealing with the immediate issue, but underneath, nothing is healing. So, in fact, it's making things feel worse because, on the top of everything else, there is now this heavy blanket of shame and low self-worth thrown into the mix. And let me tell you, this combo is no one's friend. And it just feeds into back into the cycle, making it even harder to break free from the disordered eating. Like being stuck in a loop where you are using disordered eating to avoid dealing with your needs, but then feeling so bad about it that it's just reinforced the whole cycle.
Yeah, and you said something really interesting before. You said that people may not know what their needs are. Yeah, I guess could you talk a little bit about
Yes.
that can influence disordered eating?
Yes. Sometimes people might not be very connected to their feelings and not tuned out to their internal thoughts, and which leads to the a case where people don't know what they want and what are their needs. And probably this could be related to their upbringing, where they were not provided the opportunity where they can voice their needs.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess when it comes to that connection to the body, I guess what about the topic of negative body image? How might that kind of influence someone's self-esteem in relation to disordered eating?
Okay. So, all right. Picture this, like when someone not feeling great about their body, right? It's like this dark cloud that hangs over pretty everything you do or they do. Now, this negative vibe towards their own body can really affect them, leading them down the path where their relationship with food gets all twisted. Now, instead of food being this nourishing thing, enjoyable nourishing thing, it turns into source of stress and anxiety. And this whole situation just circle back and affect their self-worth while it's done. Now, another thing is body dysmorphic disorder, or BDD for short. This is when someone gets super fixated on what they think are flaws in their appearance, flaws that might be very minor or not even noticeable to anyone else, but for them, it's all they can think about. So BDD and eating disorder often go hand in hand. This obsession with appearance can make someone's self-esteem drop, especially when they start linking their worth to how they look and what they eat. So it's like a vicious cycle where negative body image and BDD feed into disordered eating, which then throw fuels on the fire of low self-worth.
Yes. And
Now, yeah.
yeah.
Now to break that cycle, it's really tough, no doubt, but it means the person has to learn to see food in a healthy light again. And more importantly, learning to see yourself in a kinder and more forgiving way. Like it's about finding that balance and remembering that your worth is so much more than a reflection in the mirror.
Yes, definitely. But I can imagine that that link between body image and low self-esteem would contribute also to isolation and withdrawal. And I guess what might be the reinforcement of low self-esteem within that withdrawal?
So when someone is isolating themselves, it can really affect their psychological well-being and also their eating habits. Because when you're isolating yourself, it's like you're cutting off all the chances to talk about what's eating you up inside. And that can get pretty lonely. So feeling alone with your thoughts can seriously impact your self-esteem. It's like without others around you to give you a reality check or a pep talk. So all those negative thoughts about yourself start to feel way more real. And when you're feeling down, it's super tempting to look for something or anything that makes you feel like you've got a bit of control. So entering the eating disorders may be like binging or obsessing over calories or skipping meals, it kind of feels like a way to manage all that emotional turmoil by yourself.
Yes.
But yeah, so but this kind of control is totally kind of it's a totally a trap. It might seem like helping at first, but it actually feeds into that cycle of feeling bad about yourself. And before you know it, you're stuck with this in this loop where isolation leads to low self-worth, and which then pushes you toward unhealthy eating habits.
Yes, definitely. And like you were saying with body dysmorphic disorder, it may be something that is consuming someone that is not noticeable by others, but it can be so exaggerated by the person.
Yes. And usually body dysmorphic disorder, when people get super fixated on a part of their body, right now, anyone who fixate on any part of their body, they start seeing imperfections. Okay. So right now, if I look into one finger and really looking into the details, I will start seeing imperfections that I was not noticing before. And if I keep doing that, that super fixation, it will might become body dysmorphic disorder.
Yes, definitely. And it's kind of like how people can fixate on the negative and it can become all consuming that it's really hard to see the good things and the kind of light in the situation.
Yes, that's right. So the person become very consumed by those views and perception about themselves, so they fail to think about the positive in their life and their positive qualities and abilities, and even they fail to see the worth what their body can do for them, and they focus more on how it looks.
Yes, yeah, I really like that you highlighted the qualities and the abilities. I think that can just be pushed aside so much when it comes to eating disorders. Yeah, and I guess what about the differences between adolescents and adults? Why might adolescents maybe struggle more so with self-esteem growing up than adults?
Yes, I think this is might be related to this whole beauty and thinness craze that seems a little bit over the place, thanks to society and cultural putting pressure. It's like everywhere you turn, you have Instagram, movies, magazines, and there is this picture perfect image of what people are supposed to look like. And we know that adolescents are they just what they are just trying to understand themselves and building their identity during that age. They are spending too much time looking into social media where there is that picture perfect image. So they are maybe more likely to be affected than adults, because adults, they might had already the chance to build their identity and knowing what they want in life and their worth. And they are less likely maybe to be affected by eating disorder as much as the adolescents.
Yeah, that is so interesting that like adolescents are still learning things about their identity and clinging on to like social media and society to help teach them things where society may not be the best representation for that learning. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So, and those standards on social media and movies and magazines, like it's just are sky high and kind of out of touch with reality for most of us. So it's super easy to fall into the trap of comparing yourself to those ideals, and then it feels like you just don't measure up, like that feeling of not being good enough, and it can drag your self-esteem through the mud, and it twists your how you view your own body. Like, and I think it can gets a bit trickier when you are bombarded by messages saying that you need to look in a certain way to be happy or successful. It's very tempting to think that if I can lose weight or change how I look, everything will be better. And this is when the disordered eating sneak in. It just like people start chasing after this impossible ideal and hoping that it will make them feel better about themselves or be more accepted.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a lot of adolescents that are really looking for that acceptance, but also adults in the end.
Yes.
You can find your identity and things like that, but adults will still experience that bombardment of society that puts all these expectations in different age groups and what, yeah, you need to be happy in life, I guess, is what they say.
Yes. But also, pursuing that is, it seems like you're on a treadmill that is going too fast, and you're putting all this effort, but getting nowhere, except like just being more frustrated and being unhappy with yourself. It's a vicious cycle where social pressures feed into negative body image, and which can lead to the disordered eating behavior in attempt to conform with those unrealistic standards. And to break from that cycle, it's important to recognize that those so-called ideals are not only unattainable, but also not a ticket to happiness and or self-worth. So it's about learning how to tune out those external pressures and to tune into your own body.
And would you say that like self-esteem is driven by those societal expectations as the main reason for maybe a low self-esteem?
So if someone has a good self-esteem or high self-esteem, they might be likely not affected by the pressure of society. If someone has a low self-esteem, they are more likely to be affected by the social pressures. And because someone it, and when someone has a low self-esteem, they might be more looking into being accepted. And to be accepted is to be conforming to those social standards.
I see. And I guess how can we begin to look at self-esteem for people who are struggling with disordered eating?
It's very important with self-esteem. It's very important to some people can do it by themselves to improve their self-esteem. Some people might need professional help. This is a journey where it has to include looking into self-compassion, reminding the person themselves of their worth, and that their worth is not tied to any material or physical thing in this world. It's more related to their being themselves. However, this is might be a little bit difficult, and some people would require professional help. And just to understand the core beliefs that and the experiences that led to this low self-esteem.
Yes, definitely. And I guess what about for the people who struggle with feelings of worthiness or deserving of treatment? How might this kind of impact someone's ability to receive treatment for self-esteem?
Some people might feel like unworthy to receive a treatment. They don't deserve to get better. They don't deserve to get treatments and be their best self. However, I cannot generalize that because some people I see people every day coming just to work on their self-worth and improving their self-esteem.
So it's kind of like regardless of those feelings of unworthiness, the fact that they take that decision to go to therapy and what you're seeing is people are wanting to work on it and they can make those steps, and just taking the steps to go to therapy is going to really help with that unworthiness and begin to start actually like treating it and working with it.
And mostly, maybe this is driven by experiences, bad experiences, maybe consequences that they experienced in life because of low self-worth and low self-esteem.
Yes. And I guess how can then people begin to feel worthy of kind of a healthy relationship with food and body if they are struggling with that?
Start feeling worthy is about basically trying to appreciate your body for what it can do rather than just looking how it looks. Now it's not easy for sure, but it's just definitely worth for the sake of the mental and physical well-being of the person. Now another thing I think just to help with that is surrounding yourself with positive people, positive and supportive people who appreciate you for who you are is very important. And also engaging in activities that bring you joy and sense of achievement. So I think those can help. And I think seeking professional help also might help in building that self-esteem and self-confidence. It takes the effort and time, but I think it's important for the person to work towards their self-love and acceptance.
Yes, and to know that that relationship with food and body is possible.
Yes.
So I guess then, what is self-confidence?
Okay. Self-confidence is being confident about your ability, skills, and how you view yourself and how you do things in life. So, self-confidence is very important in eating disorder because it can help you to, especially when you're getting a treatment for eating disorder, it just can give you that confidence that you can overcome that challenge and also give you that perseverance, maybe to continue seeking treatment to get better and just having a healthier relationship with food.
Yes, definitely. And I guess could you talk a little bit about the ways maybe you might help someone build self-confidence, for eating disorders?
Okay, building confidence for within eating disorder. So, first we tackle the core beliefs related to self-confidence. So if someone is presenting low self-esteem or low self-confidence, sorry. So we tackle those core beliefs that really contributed to this low self-confidence. And by processing those beliefs that usually sometimes are distorted belief or unrealistic beliefs, by processing them and changing them to more realistic belief, then the person will be able to have more confidence. And that definitely help with the eating disorder.
Yes, you're definitely right, because beliefs around people's self-worth and confidence could be linked to past experiences or maybe traumatic experiences that may not be like the reality of how everyone thinks. And to have these beliefs from one experience that is then solidified a belief in every experience you have, it can be so impactful to people's lives and mental well-being.
Yes, that's right. So it's just the past experiences usually is what shapes our self-worth and self-confidence. So first working on those core beliefs that were created from these experiences is very important to help the person have more confidence and self-worth.
Definitely. And I guess, do you have any advice for someone who is struggling with their self-confidence?
I think gratitude is very important. Start looking into the positive in their life and the positive about themselves and all the achievement that they've done, not focusing only on mistakes. That's very important to build that confidence.
Yes, I really like that because, out of a row of kind of positive things, you may just focus on the negative and really discard all those kind of positive things that can happen in your life. But if you really look back at it, or when other people point them out to you, you can really see that there are positive things in there.
Yes, and sometimes people tend to minimize positive things in their life. And they might sometimes attribute those positive things not for themselves, but for something else or someone else or luck.
Yeah, you're definitely right, actually. There are people that really minimize any type of achievement, anything positive, but they may have done so much, they just can't see it.
That's why, yeah. And it affects the self-confidence because if you cannot see the things that you achieved, how you will be confident to face future things that you're going to do or future challenges. So it really affects your confidence in life greatly.
Yes. And so would you say people should maybe talk to themselves in a way where they're kind of congratulating themselves or happy and stating that they're happy having done things or speaking to other people about it?
Yes, definitely. But I think before talking about those things with others and seeking the external validation from others, it's important to have that internal validation. And that internal validation comes from praising themselves when they do something. It's very important to talk to themselves, having those internal conversations. And praising themselves when they do something or when they achieve something, and not to brush it off and not to move to the next goal or challenge without acknowledging and also celebrating their achievements.
Yes, that is really impactful. And I guess for anyone who would like to find more information about you, where could they find you?
Well, they can find me on mentalcareclinic.com.au. The phone number is 02-6100-3923.
Yes, and I wanted to say thank you so much for this episode, Daisy. It has been sensational.
Thanks, Jess, for having me today and giving me this opportunity to help others there.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.